This morning, live on WUTC, Chattanooga Mayor Andy Burke joined us for a half-hour conversation. We talked about last night's city council meeting, the protests here in Chattanooga against police brutality, and the calls for systemic change. The city's budget shortfall due to the economic impact of COVID-19, as hospitalizations of new cases here in Hamilton County hit a new high, and more. Going forward, we plan to speak with Mayor Burke on the second Wednesday of each month, and then share that live conversation here on Scenic Roots, as we do now with our conversation from this morning. Starting off with the city council meeting via Zoom last night, more than 250 people signed up to participate. I think certainly more than 150 got a chance, all talking about what has been talked about in the streets for the past 10 days or so. This went until about 1:30 in the morning. Did you see it all? And what's your takeaway?
My biggest takeaway from this is that I'm glad so many people are interested and engaged. I think this has been one of the true positives of what has happened over the last several weeks is people are engaged, concerned about the community, giving their feedback. Particularly a lot of young people are speaking up and activated. That's what we want, and it makes me optimistic for the future.
And then, as I said, this was 7 hours, and a lot of the same things that were said out in the streets. The 5 points of the protesters, starting off with what they call divest and reinvest. Divesting from the police department and reinvesting in Black and brown communities. Also, the language of defunding has been used, as has been the case in other cities, which are considering those steps and more. Minneapolis, they're talking about dismantling the police department. There's a lot of confusion about what people say, what people mean when they say defund or divest and reinvest and dismantle. How do you define those words? Where do you stand in that debate?
Well, honestly, I think that it's best for me not to define what other people are saying and hear from them what they mean. And I think they mean a lot of different things. I don't think everybody means the same thing. And so I'm trying to listen to make sure that I understand what different proposals are, what different people are saying. What I think is important for Chattanoogans to understand, first of all, is that we're not new to this discussion. In fact, over the last several years, we've made very significant changes to police policies and culture that I think you've seen play out positively in our community for the last several years, and certainly the last few weeks. As our police department and our police chief have gotten great notoriety for their response to what is going on. We have reformed our policies. We, for example, do not teach chokeholds, do not condone chokeholds. That was before any of the issues with the unjust killing of George Floyd came to the surface. These were things that we've been working on for a long time. In addition, our police department in its training does community immersion, make sure that we are, every cadet spends time with marginalized communities. These are things that we've been working on for several years. That, by the way, just, I'm sure you understand this, but that doesn't mean we think we're done. That doesn't mean we think we've made every change. This is a conversation that we've been having and we want to keep having in response to the questions of activists and the emails that I got and the Chief Roddy got. We instituted a new duty to intervene policy, which we did not have before these protests, and I believe, from what I read, from what I hear, and certainly from every values piece that I hold, it's a good thing that we have this. If you see something, you need to do something and have that duty to intervene. And on the other side, we've also been investing heavily in neighborhoods around our community. That goes from a capital standpoint, building the Avondale YFD Center and the Southside Park in Alton Park, along with many other capital improvements, and also programmatically with everything from establishing a new homelessness services division, doing our early learning investments, making sure that we are putting race at the forefront with our Styles Hutchins Fellows in partnership with UTC and others. So I promise nobody has who wants to make these investments more than me. This is what we've been working on. I welcome people to advocate for this, and we're going to keep having this conversation about how we keep people safe, that's healthy for our community and certainly our country. As you point out, Ray, this is a conversation going on around the country, and that is really positive for America.
And you mentioned Chief Roddy and duty to intervene. That was one of the 5 points put forward by the activists protesting, and also highlighting an existing policy of warning before shooting. Talk to us more about some of the things that you have signed on to in the past week. I'm talking here about 8 Can't Wait and the My Brother's Keeper pledge through former President Obama.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of discussion of the 8 Can't Wait policies. These are policies that have been shown to reduce the amount of violence in the community. And we have did virtually all of these policies before the campaign began, or at least before I became aware of the campaign. And so one of them was a duty to intervene, which we did not have, and we have done that. The others were things like de-escalation strategies and warnings before shooting. We do have those. And so we have we've been looking at those independently. And also, as President Obama asked mayors to do around the country, I signed on to the My Brother's Keeper pledge to review all those policies, because even though we have many of these policies, we also want to ensure that they're as strong as they can be. And again, I don't think about these as processes that have an end time, because as we learn more, as we experience more, we want to come back to these things that maybe even we already technically may meet the threshold of what people are talking about. But if there's somebody else who's got a better policy or a better way of teaching things, then we want to do that as well, because the goal is to keep everybody in our community safe, to ensure that people feel safe. And as part of that, you know, we've got to be willing to listen to what's going on and respond to the challenges of the day.
Another thing that we've heard from the activists and in the debate elsewhere in the country, including above all Minneapolis, where George Floyd was killed, are alternative approaches to policing, some of which you've mentioned, but community policing has been discussed a lot. And I'm wondering if you're familiar with some of the coverage that we've seen in the past week or so about what they did in Camden, New Jersey, where the police department, because of years of corruption, they did dismantle it in that case, because it was something that could not be reformed. It was decided, and then you had a countywide force. Granted, we have the police department here in Chattanooga, and then you have Hamilton County Sheriff's Department and that divide there. But just focusing on the approaches of what they began to carry out in Camden once they made an institutional change. I'm curious to know your thoughts on what they've been doing in the streets, because that has helped to reduce a lot of violent crime there.
Yes. So we believe in community policing. That's been one of our reforms over the course of the last several years. We always, in fact, we have an entire division of the police department devoted to community policing. This is, I think, part of the, if you've heard me talk about violence and crime over the last several years, one of the things you know I say is that this is all of our responsibilities, and figuring out how we do it together is the best way that we can make a difference. And so as I continue to say, we you know, there has been a lot of discussion about Camden. We'll keep looking at the different different ways that people are instituting these things that we're doing. So, because if we can do it better, if there's a way for us to partner with the community in a better way, you know, and that's more efficient and allows our community to be safer, that's what we want to do.
Another thing I wanted to ask you, and this is going to segue into talking about the budget and the economy under COVID-19. Time and time again, we heard last night from folks participating in the city council meeting about the percentage of the budget now spent on the Chattanooga police. I'm curious, off the top of your head, how much of that money is tied up in mandates, tied up in pensions, tied up in things that have nothing to do with how many officers are out in the streets and what policies they're following?
Well, we do have a lot of those dollars that are tied up into other things like pensions. We also have dollars in there that people don't typically think of as police functions, like several million dollars goes to McCamey Animal Shelter. That's part of our police budget. And so we do have both these legacy obligations, greater mandates, grants from other governments, like the federal government through the monies that we receive from them, that do make up part of that alongside of our daily requirements to meet our staffing needs. So there are all these pieces in the budget, and you know, we have our entire budget online so that anybody can go in, take a look at it, see what's in there. Just like any budget, it tends to be a little bit more complex than people may think at first, but that doesn't mean we don't also hear what people are talking about when they say they want, you know, with the general, the various terms that you were talking about earlier, Ray, like defunding or dismantling or disinvesting, all those things. Yes, there is still a significant portion of our budget that goes to current day policing obligations. And I believe that we're going to need to continue to do much of that, because we also hear from many different parts of our community who have felt ignored in the past and need some kind of response when there's a danger. One example, of course, was particularly vivid last week, when there was a gentleman on the rooftop with an AK-47 as protesters came by, and our police officers went up to take care of the situation and arrested him. These are everyday situations that we know we need to deal with to keep people safe.
Let's segue to the budget. We are looking at an $8 million budget shortfall. This is driven by the state of the economy now, life under COVID-19. What are we looking at as far as moving forward on this budget? I know there's a process, but remind folks the markers that you've laid down in this process so far.
Yeah, so we cut a little bit over $8 million from last year's budget. It's important to remember that in a normal budget, just to keep things even, the budget would be going up because costs continue to rise. So even though we have higher obligations, for example, in health insurance and things like that, we have reduced revenues. And so that gap actually is a little bit larger than it seems, even at $8.5 million. So we presented the budget back in the middle of May, and the city council has had various budget hearings over the course of the last several weeks. The last night was the final step because, as you noted, there were a great number of people who've been involved in the protests who called in. The last step before adopting the budget every year is to hold a public hearing where anybody can speak on it. That was what happened last night. And so it is on the agenda for the city council to vote on the budget last week. One of the things I'll tell you is that because of the reductions, the police department did see a seven-figure reduction already this year. That was before, of course, any of the recent focus has been on the question of funding for police departments, and so did many of our other departments. So it has been extremely challenging for us to invest in the things that we think move our city forward, as we've done in the past. And Congress has been debating this question of whether to fund state and local governments so that we can make those investments, which we think are helpful for the economy and for the quality of life of people. And I'm going to continue to advocate that Congress help governments like us so that we can do those things that are really important to people.
And of course, Congress is debating, and at the same time Congress is debating, so are state lawmakers in Nashville. And that's another piece of all this in terms of moving forward on this budget and adjusting as the rest of the year goes on.
Absolutely. So we're continuing to, we have to monitor those discussions because we're worried that we could get further cuts in various places, our funding from the state. And so as they're in session, we're monitoring those discussions. It's a very challenging year because Chattanooga has been extremely strong. As you know, at the beginning of the year, Forbes said we were going to have the number one city, be the number one city for new jobs in the country this year. Our economy was going extremely well. We've been making these key investments. Our budget has been strong, and we've laid a great fiscal foundation. So my expectation was that this was going to be a year where we really could go much further and really expand some of the initiatives that we had. But we rely a great deal on sales tax and hotel motel tax. We all know that the travel industry and entertainment industry is struggling mightily. Our sales tax dollars obviously rely heavily on restaurants, which have seen a big impact from COVID-19. And so the money just isn't there as we had hoped it would be and expected it would be just 4 months ago.
And this happens at the same time where we have record single day hospitalizations for Hamilton County. And even with reopening in phases here, there, and everywhere, the concern remains about a second wave later in the year.
Yes, it's a very challenging situation over the last few months. We've had an economic stoppage, a global pandemic, a tornado, a huge unemployment, a big discussion and unrest from people about the unjust killing of George Floyd. These are extremely complex times, and it seems that many people have stopped looking. But yes, we are at a high for our COVID-19 cases, and also for the hospitalizations. As you note, Ray, one of the things that people are talking about is the potential for a resurgence in October and November. The reason for that is because that's the season where most people cough and sneeze anyway. And so typically what you want to see is during the summer, when the weather is good and there's less of the cold and flu going around, you want to see the numbers drop. Well, we can't really, if it happens, we couldn't really call October, November a resurgence because our numbers are growing now. And so we really need to make sure that we're getting this under control and listening to public health experts, because we don't want to start that season with high COVID-19 rates.
And those public health experts here in Hamilton County say that they're stretched thin. And while cases are being reported from all zip codes, once again, we cycle around to the parts of the population that are hardest hit, the most vulnerable parts, and those include some of the same Black and Brown communities that we were discussing minutes earlier on another issue.
Yeah, about two-thirds of our cases right now are from the Latinx community. It is one of the greatest concerns of mine that that the people who are impacted first by each of the things that have made such a dramatic impact on our lives, the economic crisis, the global pandemic, and the unrest because of issues with police departments. Those are all people of color. This is, I think, in large part why you see not only the protests, but also widespread acceptance and agreement, not necessarily with every point of the protest, but understanding and acceptance of the overall point of the protest, because this is a traumatic moment where many people are worried about paying their rent, about having a job, about getting the next meal for themselves and their families. And it's people of color and those hourly wage workers who are seeing the impact of all this first.
When we last talked, it was as there was a decision to reopen in phases from the governor, and we talked about you and Hamilton County Mayor Jim Coppinger. Before that round of decisions in this process, you were pretty aggressive in asserting how we should handle things for the month of May and into the month of June. Do you think we would have seen a different outcome now if County Mayor Coppinger and the governor had followed your view instead of where they came out on this?
Well, I can't really say what would have happened. I'll leave that to experts. Let me tell you what I believe. is that the best thing that we can do, given the coronavirus path and knowing that it's going to be here for the next year, is when as we reopen, my goal and what the plan that we had drawn up did was to try to create new expectations and norms for our city that said, this is just the way it is. You socially distance, you wear a mask, you wash your hands, and to slowly reopen so that you can establish that and make sure that as many people as possible are obeying those new expectations and norms before you open everything up. And I think that that didn't happen. So now we have to find new ways to establish those norms and expectations. And that's what I'm trying to do now, I think, with my communications, with the webinars that city government's having, with all the different pieces that we're putting into place. But it is extremely difficult, as anybody can see, because you go out and it's obvious that those norms and expectations aren't there.
Because a lot of people are not wearing masks.
Because a lot of people aren't wearing masks. A lot of people aren't social distancing. A lot of people aren't taking it seriously. And our numbers are should concern everybody.
And as we wrap up here, a couple more questions. How are you, your staff, and city government operating at this time since we last talked? And where and how do you expect to be operating as June rolls on and we roll on into the summer?
Well, we're still, City Hall is still closed. I'm speaking to you as I pace between two rooms of my house. And I spend 90%+ of my time in the house because I'm trying to, you know, make sure that we practice what we preach. And also, city government has a lot of employees. And as we come back, we're going to add to the daily number of people in our downtown and in our restaurants and in our shops. And so so we want to be careful about that. We're going to start City Hall going back in next Monday on the 15th. We have extensive plans for how we create those new norms and expectations internally. Lots of employees have participated in how we do that. And we're going to start putting together all the pieces so that we open to the general public for regular business after the July 4th holiday.
And then, of course, if people want to contact city government at this time, where can they go online? Where can they call for the basic information to take them wherever they need to go?
Yeah, so I will say, based on my experience over the last several weeks, people haven't had a hard time contacting us, which is a good thing. We've seen contact like we've never seen, and it's been challenging, but it's also been great to see the expectation. So the amount of engagement. You can always email me at mayor@chattanooga.gov. That's mayor@chattanooga.gov. If people have some service need that is bugging them or they have some question about, they can always call 311 or plug it into the chat 311 app. People are welcome to call my office. It's not always the most efficient way to get in touch with me, 423-643-7800. And then I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and we're seeing a lot of engagement through all those different platforms.
All right. Mayor Andy Burke, thanks so much.
Thank you.